shelter, or medicine, to name but a few. In their place, we have been given malnutrition, poverty, disease, suicide, and bureaucratic promises of a better tomorrow. Your America has not been the land of your proclaimed equality and justice for all. May your God forgive you. The treatment of our people has been a national tragedy and disgrace. The time has come to put an end to that disgrace. Alcatraz, Fort Lawton, whatever necessary, we must now manage our own affairs and control our own lives, and through it all, remain to be the true American.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
It's time to pack your bags and join us for Camp KBOO. Make a summer of memories with KBOO and support grassroots media by becoming a member today. Go to kboo.fm/give to help us reach our $50,000 goal by June 29th. Thank you.
One, two, three, four.
Y'all ready for this?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Never been done before.
Talking about a subject.
Farewell to you,
about to go cool, we gone.
Go food. Go food.
ASE got produce. ASE about to go cool. Whipping in the kitchen, whipping in the kitchen.
Ooh.
I be whipping in the kitchen, whipping in the kitchen.
Ooh.
Chop it up. Chop it, chop it, chop it, chop it up. And slow food got you sloppy, bruh. So chop it, chop it, chop it, chop it up.
Go food.
Chop it up, chop it, chop it, chop it, chop it up. The slow food got you sloppy, bruh. So chop it, chop it, chop it, chop it up.
See, in my hood, they ain't really much to eat.
Popeyes on the corner, McDonald's right across the street. All this talk about guns and the drugs, pretty serious. But look at what they feeding y'all, that's what's really killing us. Please change the food in my school, make it good. Get that fake food up out of my hood. Hope the message not misunderstood. Grow and cook your own food, yes you could. Got the little homies in the garden, got the big homies selling collard greens. In the north side, ain't starving since Community Cooks been on the scene.
Screaming hot Cheetos and Takis, boy, you better eat your broccoli. Fake food is kinda lame, putting poison in your brain. Need more people at the club, popping bottles of that water, dabbing on that fast food. Pulling veggies out the garden, I go hard, I eat good. And I put that on my mama, eating healthy school lunch. And that's word to Miss Obama, drinking water, living longer. No processed drama, call me John Deere, shawty, I be growing like a farmer, dad.
Grown food, grown food.
ASC got produce, ASC about to go cool, we gone.
Grown food, grown food.
ASC got produce, ASC about to go cool.
Whipping in the kitchen, whipping in the kitchen.
Ooh.
I be whipping in the kitchen, whipping in the kitchen.
Ooh.
Chop it up, chop it, chop it, chop it, chop it up. The slow food got you sloppy, bruh. So chop it, chop it, chop it, chop it up.
I get the C from the oranges, I get the B from the broccoli, I get the A from the milk, I get my vitamins properly. My food be packed with the minerals, I hope you taking this literal. So when you 65 plus, you should be passing your physical. Try tell them, try tell them, but they did not believe me. All that sugar was sweet, till I got diabetes. You better rethink your drink, this stuff is not what you think. Get you some water or something, I get it free from the sink. Keep it healthy, but still got that good taste. Got an appetite for flavor and an appetite for taste. If you need a couple pointers, I can get you some help. And then I see you on the vibe, cause you need some milk.
11 year old with some big dreams, about to make it big on the big screen. Don't pay attention at TV, cause fake food ain't what you need. Come on the house, let us chop it up. Expense elements made it popular. The youth of the juvenile no stopping us. The youth of the juvenile no stopping us. But the health, wealth, social change. My fruits and veggies be off the chain. Want real food for real people, gonna break your brain. Cafe, real money, that's all I need. Get the green, back clean. Wanna make 100 meals, we done cook the 100 meals. Cause my people gotta eat.
My people gotta eat.
Grown food. Grown food.
ASC got produce. ASC about to go cool, we gone.
Grown food. Grown food.
ASC got produce. ASC about to go cool.
Whipping in the kitchen, whipping in the kitchen. I be whipping in the kitchen, whipping in the kitchen.
Chop it up, chop it, chop it, chop it, chop it up. The slow food got you sloppy, bruh. So chop it, chop it, chop it, chop it up.
Go food, go, 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 go. Go food, go, 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 go.
Chop it up, chop it, chop it, chop it, chop it up. The slow food got you sloppy, bruh. So chop it, chop it, chop it, chop it up.
It is Hard Knock Radio, Davey D, hanging out with you this afternoon. On yesterday's show, we heard part one of the special presentations from Kali and Kuno of Cooperation Jackson and Tandi Chemaringa from Black Liberation Media, as well as our sister station, KPFK. It is called Build and Fight Formula. And yesterday we started the third installment. This is part two. A lot of the Q&A that came out of the presentation with Kali and Kuno. So we're going to turn it over to our comrades and let them break it down for you right here on Hard Knock Radio. Without further ado, take it away, Tandi Chemaringa. Take it away.
Kali, in terms of what you wanted to have addressed in today's session.
I haven't been able to keep up with everything in the chat, but I see some good things, you know, there. You know, I think the critical piece I just want to address, and then let's just kind of open it up for questions, time, because it's almost, you know, we're almost at the hour, and appreciate it, you know, as always, everybody's time and listening and coming up with stuff. I think the critical piece here that I would just like to end on is utilizing this organizing practice in a way to build local municipal power. But let's not be satisfied with thinking local municipal power is going to be enough to deal with the nature of this overall system, mm-hmm. right? We are going to have to build at each level and federate in order to aggregate power to take on the awesome might of capital and United States government, right? We need to be very clear about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm making an argument against just kind of local utopianism, if you would, right? Or local isolationism. Definitely want folks to build as much strength and perfect, you know, everything you can, come up with prefigurative systems wherever you may be, right? But the thinking that you're going to win this in isolation against, you know, the awesome might of what exists in those two entities I just named, I would encourage you, comrades, to don't delude yourself in that way. And again, I'm going to bring it back in because it's important. If nothing else in the world is instructive to you, look at what's happening in Palestine today, right? And the determination of once these folks get challenged a bit, to what extent they will go to maintain control. It's a warning. It is a warning. And I want you to think for yourself, regardless of whether you agree with the political ideology of the Palestinian resistance, rest assured, whether you agree with it or not, and the Palestinians, you know, the factions in the West Bank, the factions in Gaza, they haven't been in perfect alignment for quite some time. Don't matter at all to the damn Zionists, right? They on a genocidal program, regardless of you at one point tried to have peace with them or whether you decided you was always just going to duke it out. Doesn't really matter. Their true objectives and aims are becoming clear. That's not a particular case that's special and unique, because look at how Trump is threatening Iran. Look at how he's threatening Greenland, hmm. All right? Greenland.
Greenland only got two people. Why are you threatening them?
Probably because he just figured I can, right? So we are at a phase, right, where basically his faction, I'm talking about Trump, his faction of capital was saying they're surrendering being the global cop and they're just going to local bunker down into their zone and try to control it. You know, if that's what it fundamentally comes down to in the race for materials. But the point is, don't make, you know, because there's a way in which, you know, that struggle gets caught up in a particular focus on whether you are anti-Semitic or not, in a distorted way about how that term has come to be politicized and weaponized in a very distorted and aggravated sense. This really don't, you don't, to look at it on a global scale ain't got nothing to do with that particular piece or to isolate it in some special way, right? The terms of control are the same everywhere, right? Like what, like I'm saying, why I'm citing Greenland. In Trump's mind, I'm gonna get there one way or another, right? We're gonna colonize that space and take it over because we want the raw minerals, we want a strategic positioning, we wanna be able to control the Arctic Sea, to make sure that Russia and China don't have access to bypass our control from their perspective. So, you know, we need to put that in mind and be very clear about what it is ultimately we're going to come up against, because you got to prepare yourself mentally and we got to prepare those around us, right, you know, for what's coming down. And we are at a disadvantage. A lot of our social movements in the United States are at a disadvantage because there's been kind of a bubble and a shelter of a kind against the type of violence you might see, you know, taking place, you know, right now in you know, the Congo or in Palestine, in other places on the earth. We have built shelter from that. But that don't mean you will be sheltered forever, and definitely don't fall into the logic of American exceptionalism, right? And thinking certain things cannot happen here or won't happen here. They are happening here now, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because times have changed and they need to change how they rule to maintain their position. So mm-hmm. we need to get ready for that and be prepared to federate and build political organization on a new basis in a way that we have not thought about it in a while. And I'll end with this and then open up a question because I'm going to this piece. You know, do not think that the Democratic Party is going to come up with any solution that is going to help us anytime soon. Give up that false notion and that fantasy, right? Do not fall for that trick again, please. I implore you, right? And I'm speaking not on the basis of ideology, if you would. I want everybody to just think back to the summer of the George Floyd rebellion and how they twisted that social movement and what it was demanding on the heels of the pandemic, right? And the longstanding calls for quote unquote racial justice, you know, for black and brown people into a narrow campaign of anybody but Trump, you know, to get themselves elected, and then didn't change anything, right? Didn't really campaign to change anything. So don't fall for that Kool-Aid again. This program requires that everybody organize autonomously outside of either of the duopolies of capital in this country. And I want everybody to be clear on that in terms of what we are aiming to create. The Federation is of autonomous communities and political formations, treating with each other and negotiating with each other, federating each other to aggregate power against those two forces, very clear and specific.
All right, so I've got 5 o'clock, my time, and you have a hard stop at 5:30. You got to get out of here and go do something else. So I'm going to run on over here to the, well, I'm not going to run. I'm going to mosey on over here to the chat and see what some folks are talking about. So, yeah, we know that there are minerals there. It's another, you know, piece of natural resource with natural minerals. But I thought this was an interesting comment, you know, that AI uses computer servers that have an impact on the ecology, on the environment.
That's right.
Because of all of the heat that they use and release into the atmosphere. So, and how they contribute to climate change. Now, I don't know if he necessarily want to just stick a bunch of servers in Greenland, but I did want to at least highlight that comment.
Well, a good number of U.S. military servers, that stuff is already up in Iceland, Greenland, and some of those islands. That's already the case. You know, and some of the world's seed banks, some of them of a private nature, some of them, you know, through UN kind of administered programs. You know, they started setting, one of them, the most famous one, they started setting it up in the early 1990s, trying to make sure that in case there was some kind of, you know, a catastrophic extinction level event, that there would be enough of the quote unquote, the genetic material, the seeds, to kind of repopulate the earth. And that one is already being threatened by climate change now, even though they didn't plan or anticipate the permafrost being melted that quickly. So, this is the problem, you know, because a lot of their equipment, you know, this data processing stuff requires massive amounts of energy. It requires these massive kind of storage pieces that they don't, in the long term, I would argue, they don't really have a clear program of how they're going to deal with that other than just keep polluting at an ever greater rate.
Now, I know I always say to you, be brief, but this has brought up something for me. So I'll try to be brief. I just started watching because I was bored. I think it's on Hulu, this show called Paradise with Sterling K. Brown.
I've heard of it. I haven't watched it.
I didn't want to watch it because, once again, it's the black folks trying to save empire. But I got bored and I continued to watch the show. And basically, they talk about this big chunk of the ice sheet, the glacier in Antarctica or somewhere, falls off into the ocean. And now a giant tsunami is wreaking havoc all over the world. Giant earthquakes in California. I think California breaks off. But the tsunami hits the eastern seaboard and puts everything underwater. So a group of billionaires, led by one particular billionaire, has commissioned the building of a city deep underground in Colorado, and it's called Paradise. So once they get the information that the tsunami is hitting, coming to DC, Philly, etc., in about 2 hours, they hop in their choppers and they all go underground to their new location. and they don't want people to know that there are actually survivors after this catastrophic event that has happened to the U.S. up above. And so it gets all entangled with a murder plot to kill the president who wants to tell the world to survive, you know, all of that matter. And that's why Sterling Brown, whose Secret Service, his job is to guard the president, his best friend, you know how they do it all. So once you get all past it, I just thought it was interesting that they went with the climate, the possibility of an extinction level event happening due to climate change here in the U.S. I said I was going to be brief. Let me hush.
Well, we are already facing an extinction level. We're living mm-hmm. through a mass extinction. Mm-hmm. We need to be clear about that. Right now, we are already living through a mass extinction. Mm. And the capitalist system has only aggravated that further. Because there's one part of it which was, you know, the degree to which humanity has contributed to like the megafauna and all that stuff dying off, you know, that's probably going to be debated, you know, forever. I think mm-hmm. clearly some role of our ancestors in different places play, you know, some contribution to that. But most of that, we could safely say, you know, based upon our current knowledge and understanding, was as a result of an earlier era of rapid climate change, right? So this little period, little in the terms of geologic time, let me be clear, but this little period of like the last 25,000 years stable, warm environment is supposed to basically just be a break between mm-hmm. a deep kind of interglacial period. You know, basically another ice age should be on the way, right? Mm. But the amount of carbon, methane, and other gases that the capitalist system over the last 200 years has put in the environment has probably forestalled that or created, you know, kind of feedback loops that nobody quite understands, and we probably don't have the capacity to model out or model out sufficiently. And I say that on the basis of, you know, most of the climate models that they started really predicting and putting their kind of supercomputer capacity and all their best minds to in the 1990s and up into the 2000s, well, we've already exceeded most of those targets, right? And one of the things that's been buried, a story that's been buried the last couple of weeks, I think The Guardian had the most clear, for all of his problems, The Guardian had the most clear article that I saw about not only is this the warmest year kind of already on record, but the pace of carbon emissions is already exceeding by all bounds, and there's no way that we can stay. We've already shattered, I think, the 1.5. They were saying there's no way to come back from that. Mm-hmm. So most any good science fiction right now is going to be trying to give people a warning about a pending and urgent climate catastrophe, because in truth, comrade, that's where we already at, right? It's not mm-hmm. like climate change is coming and climate it's here. Catastrophe is here. It's like here. Y'all experience a dose of it in Los Angeles, you know, to be clear. And for folks who don't, I'm an LA boy originally. And for folks who don't understand how part of that works, you know, the dry season in LA is in June through October.
Hmm.
That fire was in
January. Winter. Right? Allegedly winter here in California.
Right? The cold months, the wet months, right? It typically rains in Los Angeles, at least in the period that I grew up. It typically rains through January and February, and we might not likely get more another good drop of rain until sometime around like November any good year. So this was doing in part supposed to be a rainy season. So I'm just citing this so folks understand in real time from experiences that people have had, like me and you have had in our lifetime. So we understand like the rapid nature of how this is all collapsing in our eyes, right in front of our eyes. And we keep trying to evade it. And so I want to come back to this piece around food sovereignty, because if the larger piece of what I really wanted to entail, and we'll come back to it in due time, mm-hmm. but one of the critical pieces around the scaffolding of the Build and Fight formula to really try to build a more eco-socialist oriented future mm-hmm. is this is the place where there has to be a clear focus on restoration to deal with climate change.
mm-hmm.
right? And restoring soils, right? Decolonization, right? Renativizing our ecosystems, like restoring native plants in all of our ecosystems to reset the balance, to get things back in gear, to deal with the carbon cycles, to deal with the water cycles, to put that all in perspective. Those are some critical things that, you know, in a full layout of what food sovereignty entails, at least in the way that we are trying to articulate it, you know, it would be those particular pieces. You have to also focus in on a bioregional program, right? Including how you like relocalize your food production to bring those back in line, which would mean for many of us kind of some radical shifts in our diet, which ultimately would be necessary because the way the globalized food piece goes in the long term, it is not sustainable, y'all. In the short term, most of what we're doing is not sustainable, and people are going to find some of this out real quickly with these tariffs, right? Because I don't think people fully understand how integrated the food economy is with the world economy. So your little coffee that you like, no coffee grown in the United States except for in some greenhouses somewhere, right? There's not a product that grows here. Not that many bananas grow here, right? A whole bunch of fruit, even things that you might think should be grown here or traditionally grown here, like blueberries, raspberries, blackberries, strawberries. Most of that in the United States is grown in Mexico, or most of that's consumed in the United States is grown by Mexico or further out. So folks gonna learn real quick how integrated things are, right? And the detriment of how some things got built in the way that it was built. Not that facilitating, you know, exchange between people, I'm trying to imply in any form, is a negative. It is not, right? I think people should be free to exchange on principle equal terms, but that is not how this global system was built. It was built to exasperate and highlight inequalities and to lock them into a system of super exploitation. We need to break that. That is part of what this system that we've been articulating is trying to get at. And so at a later date, we'll try to go more specifically into this piece around the full kind of component of food sovereignty and what it can kind of entail programmatically that includes all of these particular points. But again, I just want to focus in today. Folks need to start struggling in the here and now to meet immediate needs next couple of weeks to the next 2 or 3 years, if not longer, given the profound shift that we are living through, lay the basis of being able to start producing in mass, right? And that means going after re-articulating our relationship to the land that are immediately in our communities that we could and should have access to, that we're going to have to fight for.
How do we build access to land across political ideologies and danger? For instance, money is being offered to a garden group I'm a part of from a Zionist org that says they're only about food access here?
Good question. Good question. Number one, part of the core piece, to put it in stark material terms, we should try to be, and I would encourage all of you to try to be as self-reliant in the pursuit of food sovereignty as possible. And that starts with taking some portion of the resources, including your financial resources, and putting them into collective pools or collective sharing so that you're not dependent upon outside groups like this group to come in and fund everything, right? Now, if they wanna lend if they wanna contribute, I wouldn't say lend, if they wanna contribute on the basis of you maintaining your political and ideological sovereignty, then that's your democratic, you know, choice or right to choose. But understand, most money comes with strings attached, mm-hmm. right? Do not be fooled in thinking that it don't, right? And those strings could just be subtle expectations, unstated expectations. Be mindful of that and try to clear the terms of, you know, I'm making this contribution to achieve X, Y, and Z. And I'm expecting you to make this contribution to attain X, Y, and Z. This is how we're going to mutually benefit. Lay out all the cards on the table as you possibly can. And I'm also stating that so we can deal with working across ideologies of the left, right? Dealing with across ideologies, you know, in general, like with the right, that's a whole nother conversation and subject. But starting more insular in this particular case, you know, how do revolutionary nationalists and anarchists and socialists and communists, how should we come to terms with each other? I would argue that we have to do it along principle lines. And the first principle should be that we are aiming to produce for use, for broad communal use, and not for profit. Now, that doesn't mean that some of the things that we might produce collectively won't be sold. The reality of it is we are going to have to produce some things in the here and now within the system that we are currently embedded in to buy more seeds, right? To buy, to treat for things that we can only exist, at least for now, on the quote-unquote open market. But the point is we need to be thinking, again, around food sovereignty in the work that we're doing. Are we producing enough to go to seed that we can do this in regenerated stuff and not be dependent upon having to go to Lowe's or Home Depot year in and year out, cycle in and cycle out for the seeds that we need, right? Can we create our own seed banks? We're gonna have to. That's the answer. The answer to the question, we're gonna have to figure that out and to start thinking about doing that. But alive first upon the basic principles of communal need, and I would stress the first piece is getting people to a table to agree upon, we're gonna produce this to meet broad human need, and not, and then we have to deal with the elements of how we want to do distribution in regards to dealing with that need, and not set up these kind of crazy value-based systems, which might say that, well, you know, this homeless person wants to come in and gain food, but didn't contribute a penny or didn't contribute any labor, right? That gets you into the charity zone and in the discriminatory zone. But if we're producing for human need, we're producing for human need. And we're trying to build, create relationships with people over time. It's not going to be instantaneous, but we can be in relationship with folks to transform all of our behaviors, not just one person's behavior, all of our behavior. So there's alignment around principles that I think we are going to have to orient ourselves around, and what the objectives are in relationship to those principles is where I would say to start. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, right? Because all of our tendencies come with some with issues that can sometimes can be hard to overcome. We in the movements come with histories of us often attacking, undermining, even killing each other that we're going to have to contend with. But if we want to come out of this, you know, without capital dictating, we're going to have to figure this out one way or another.
What ways can folks get water for agriculture? Droughts, water catchment against code or law? What are some ideas and solutions you have seen?
I'm gonna put it this way to not get nobody in trouble. You have to be creative. Be creative as you can be. And where there's, you know, one of the pieces I have, you can't do none of this without access to water. So I'm glad Michelle brought this up, right? And again, that's where it goes back to the municipal level of engagement that ultimately we're gonna have to get to. Right. Now we need to, I think in every area, I can say in our case, you know, Jackson has some major water issues and how we've been trying to deal with those, you know, and it's still a system that we learn and trying to perfect, and climate change has impacted it. So we've got these huge water tanks that we put on basically almost all of our CLT, you know, properties, all of our properties. To deal with food production there, but also to be a recourse for when there are acute moments of a water crisis that we can distribute it that way and not be distributed water to the community and not be dependent upon going to go buying water from Costco or Lowe's, which we've done in the past, you know, to try to give out to be a media form of relief. We want to get past that. So we try to invest in, all right, we have a little bit of money, let's build these tanks, let's do some water catchment systems, and then let's utilize it in the most creative ways possible to meet human needs, right? But we have to build up levels of education and defense around that so folks know what is the appropriate use of these things, how do we do it so that we stay within the confines of what the state is trying to impose upon us, but our ultimate aim is to respect the need of what people need, right? Not the limitation of what the law imposes. Mm-hmm. Right. So that's why I'm saying, you know, I'm not going to try to get nobody directly in trouble, but you're going to have to be creative in many communities where they have outlawed water catchment, at least for drinking water. Right.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying I don't believe you, but if it's that serious, I doubt somebody going to be like, well, Kali Okuna on YouTube said I should do this. I mean, come on, man. Stop it. Just stop.
Yeah, y'all. They will.
Come on, y'all. Come on, y'all. Come on. No, I'm not talking about the authorities. I'm talking about the people. The people doing the cash.
Since we're doing this publicly, there's enemies watching this as well. Right? And some of them recently came on my post on X for a piece around, you know, telling folks that they need to challenge, intervene. Don't just let them, you know, roll up on folks and disappear them and just, you know, record with your video. I was saying, like, no, intervene. Right, engage in some questions, some, you know, nonviolent direct action. There are means and methods that we can employ to defend our people that we got to put in some use. And so that got reported to the FBI on that. So, you know, look, they got their brown shirt forces out there.
I got you. I got you.
We need to be mindful that they Trump knew exactly what he was doing by pardoning all those January 6th folks.
Okay.
He created a brown shirt effect right then and there. We need to be mindful of that. Because the message that sent very clearly, if you do something in my name and my interest, right, if I give certain orders and I want to deploy militia-like forces to exact justice or to enforce the rules that I want to enforce that may go against contrary to what the courts may tell me, and I'm citing things that which he's already doing, y'all, I ain't making nothing up. What that message clearly sent, if you go and you put people in check, I got your back. I'll get you covered. So this is the political reality we live in. And even though it ain't graduated per se to some of these levels of violence, best believe it easily could. Let me, you know, put it this way. If I'm halfway right, Tandy, and the price of food goes up 50, 60%, right, and say the next 5 or 6 months, it's going to be a lot of angry people out there, right? And they're going to have to resort to different measures and means to keep people in check, because what just took place on what was the 5th, right? It was a couple. It looked like to me, I haven't read all the reports, but it looked like a couple of million people turned out to protest against Trump and Elon Musk and Doge and some of the stuff that they're doing. Well, if people get more confident, that's only going to grow, right? And as things get more acute in terms of the pain that the people in the United States are going to feel, you know, at the pump and at the grocery store, right, and with the utility companies, if he ain't planning on leaving, if he ain't planning on surrendering to public pressure, if he ain't planning on surrendering to Democratic control, what else is left than to start first deploying the brown shirts to put folks in check? So we best not be naive, y'all. That's my point I'm trying to drive home, right? And be mindful, be strategic, but meet the need and meet and rise to the occasion. That is what we're going to have to get at, right? And we have to build the capacity to challenge these things, right? Just challenging on an individual basis is not going to be sufficient, y'all, because they can pick people off one by one. So to get into this, it's one thing if you just only got one or two people creating these water catchment systems, say in a community, that could be targeted. But if we got, say, like Inglewood, I'm gonna target Inglewood out. If you got like 10,000 people in Inglewood working on this program, starting to do water catchment systems and put them to public use, and then communities that are working with them and relying upon those systems to meet certain needs, that exacts a political force that, if mobilized, right, would be far harder for the system to put down or criminalize in any fundamental way. So we have to think about how do we aggregate our power to execute any of this, right? And then challenging the law becomes a question of force. I'm going to go to Marx, or Engels actually said that at a certain point, right, when laws are in conflict or when rights are in conflict, force is what decides. we are getting to that point. Trump and his forces are already understanding. Bannon is clear about the type of force that Kim and his movement and his forces should be executing. We got to get clear on that on our end.
I have 525, sir. What do you want to do?
Well, let's do this. Just in the interest of time, mm-hmm. again, I hope this was helpful. We have tried to adjust a little bit in the practical terms to move people, I think, to a political space to meet the necessity of what's going to occur and arise as a basis of Trumpflation of what's coming down. We got to get out there and start organizing on new scales. Mm-hmm. I do fundamentally want to propose that the full complement of what we're calling the program, the practices of position, that, you know, these are some fundamental, this outline of a program constitutes some core things that can help us fight against, you know, the Trumpflation and all of the social consequences that are going to come. But it's going to, you know, require us organizing on a mass scale, right? And that you got to start where you are, but you got to build and aggregate. And I want to implore folks that with them cutting so many federal jobs, the state level cuts on the result of the resources depleting from that are going to come next. So there's going to be more unemployment. And instead of folks kind of lamenting, you know, look at that, is let's find ways to put more of our time capacity into these productive activities on our own accord to meet the need. So there's a flip of the mind that I think we want to try to engage in around seeing time as a that we might have to do certain things as an asset rather than a liability, but that requires a mental shift. So I want to try to get folks to start thinking about that in terms of, you know, how we're reaching out to folks, how we want to try to bring them into organization and bring them into struggle in this next period. And one of the critical pieces is divesting people of some illusions. And that big illusion is thinking that the Democratic Party is going to come and do something to save us. You know, don't drink that particular Kool-Aid. And with that, Tondi, I'll say, you know, I just want to, we're going to be doing this again next month.
On a different topic, but all part of the Build and Fight program.
Right. So if you can put that up, just so folks have that and see what the next one is going to be about, worker self-organization and self-management in this period, and what type of broad, you know, really working class organization is going to be needed to deal with owning and controlling the means of production. That's fundamentally what that piece is going to be kind of oriented around, and how we need to gear ourselves up for this new moment that's coming, because there's already some signs and indication in the market that a recession is here. I think it's going to be far worse, far larger than what we experienced in 2008, 2009. And those of you, I think everybody listening to this was alive then and experienced then. So recall what that impact that had and bring it up to scale. Remember, one of the critical things that came out of that was the Occupy movement, the Indignados movement, that wave that occurred. Let's think of this in a prefigurative way and try to get ahead of it now. It's hard to predict what might, you know, pop off. In my experience, working with folks like Max Rimmel and Desha Giocalli and mm-hmm. Brandon King and many other folks. I'm not going to try to name everybody here who worked with what we tried to initiate this national take back the land piece and call for on May Day of what was that, 2009, you know, we tried to encourage folk to do land occupations then. We were able to do a fair number. We thought that was going to pop off in the way that Occupy did. That didn't, you know, take place. I think we were heading in the right direction, but just not the right issue per se. But, you know, this is drawn from that experience and many others. And trying to get us to prepare is what this series is about, to prepare for what's coming and to be in a better position for an outcome that we should determine. Because, like, you know, I'm a bar from Gil Scott in the closing, you know, we should put ourselves in the best, you know, position to create the future that we want rather than just be subject to it.
So I'm getting lobbied for one more question. And actually, I don't want to clown Kali, but since he's my brother, I can clown him. Somebody said, just one more question briefly. I'm like, Kali can't do brief. He can do your question, but he's not going to answer it briefly. So what you want to do, Kali?
I'll do my best. Last question? I do my best. 2 minutes. I got the rope.
Okay. Ashy Knuckles wants to know, what is Kali's stance on farmers using sliding scale CSA pricing, charging above market price to higher income customers and institutions, and free boxes for low income neighbors? Is this in line with the build and fight formula?
Yes and no. And again, you know me well. I'll try to be as brief in this case as possible. To deal with the variances in income and accessibility, market accessibility based upon income and spending power, that is a good way to subsidize folks and to keep prices in control. That is not something in the long term we want to be dependent upon. Ultimately, we are trying to balance out the income as a differential, period. And that is what we should be working towards enhancing overall everybody's overall productive capacity. And that means bringing more of our skill to bear in the market, but not having that be mediated by prices and or wages and the extraction of our value, right, our wage labor in this particular point. I'm probably getting a little too technical and a little too Marxist for maybe some, but the basic thing is we don't want to continue living in a world where there are some who have profound more income and access to resources and wealth than there are others. And that is, we want to get away from having to subsidize things because we've actually built common where things could be exchanged upon, you know, from each according to their ability, to each according to their need.
I didn't do this in the beginning, but now that we've come to the end, for those of you who stuck with us and for those of you who'll be watching this later, like, share, and subscribe to this video. Like it here on Black Liberation Media, like it on Cooperation Jackson's YouTube channel, like it on my channel, Ritwork. Share this link, share this information with individuals and organizations you are working with or plan to work with. This is not something that can be done in isolation. This is actually an action plan that Cooperation Jackson has been working on and believes will lead to a transformation if we can get on board, all of us, in some way, shape, form, or fashion. Also, look at the bottom of the screen. If you want to support self-sufficiency and sustainability, hit up the Venmo and PayPal of Cooperation Jackson the same way you hit up my Cash App, my Venmo, and Black Liberation Media's Cash App, Venmo, etc., Patreon, because we're going to have to fund this ourselves. We no grants. Fund this ourselves, folks. So yeah, hit up Cooperation Jackson's love buttons, which are scrolling at the bottom of the page. Like, share, and subscribe. Kali, we're coming back in May. And what are we going to be talking about in May?
We're going to be talking about worker self-organization, self-management. You can put those two pieces up, those last two pieces, so we can leave folks with that. You can find these are going to be up on our website soon and all of our social media. But that is going to be May 13th. So be on the lookout for us, you know, we'll try to sharpen this up continuously and make it as relevant to the times. I anticipate there'll be some major worker upheaval, so it'll be right on time. You know, to kind of plug into that and provide examples. So be on the lookout, y'all. And thank everybody for tuning in. Definitely spread the word. You know, if you found this helpful, repost it. You know, like, share, subscribe, as Tanya said, and get your family, friends, organizations, comrades, all on it so we can start escalating the struggle.
All right. Thank you again, Kali, for your time. Thank you all of y'all for tuning in and for hanging out with us. We will catch you on the next one. Peace.
It is Hard Knock Radio, Davey D hanging out with you. You've been listening to the conclusion of the fight and build formula, which is brought to you by Kali and Kuno from Cooperation Jackson and Dondi Chemaringa from Black Liberation Media, as well as our sister station, KPFK. We're going to Head on out the door. We will catch you tomorrow on these airwaves. Peace out.
Empire? For years, I've studied the histories of empires, especially their rise and their fall. Europe's most illustrious example, Rome, grew from a city to a state and finally a world empire. When their men tired of fighting, they trained non-Romans in their war tactics, and when they were treated with contempt by Romans, they responded by sacking the city and stealing their treasure before leaving. It wasn't the end of Rome, but it was a signal of the beginning of the end. Empires rise and empires fall. That is a lesson of history. A century ago, Britain boasted that the sun would never set on the British Empire. A few world wars later, and after decolonization struggles, and it is an empire no more. Its recent Brexit episode has cleaved its economic strength, and most foreign observers see it as a self-inflicted wound. It shows us that great empires can succumb to a kind of suicide. Now, what of the American empire? Is it immune to the lessons of history? Half a century ago, it lost a war to a poor Asian nation. After, it inflicted millions of casualties upon them. The country that won the war was called Vietnam. Just days ago, it elected an immoral man whose only real claim to fame was his bank account. Because of this election, America has no voice with which to tell other countries how to elect their leaders. It has no voice in questions of morality. It has great power, yes, but that didn't win in Vietnam, nor in Afghanistan, where they simply outweighed the Americans. Empires are not immortal. They may last for centuries, yes, but ultimately they rise and they fall. With love, not fear, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
In the realm of the airwaves, where the truth does spin,
Hard Knock Radio takes the mic, let the dialogue begin.
From the heart of the culture, where the beats do sway,
hip-hop, pop, politics, and culture rule.
Thank you.
in to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Dr. Zom's Stereo Obscura. Offbeat sounds for talented listeners.